Cha-ching. That's the sound of Lowe's Labor Day savings. Get up to 45% off select major appliances and save up to an additional $100 on select laundry pairs. Plus, get 3 bags of Miracle-Gro 0.75 cubic foot garden soil for just $10. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in-store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. See Lowe's.com for more details. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Well, it's been a week. A mother who everyone agrees took her 3 children out of this world is sitting in a courtroom in a wheelchair. Her ex-husband, the father of those children, just spent 2 days on the stand telling the jury he never saw her harm the kids, that she got worse and worse in medications, and her doctors kept switching medications, and then he begged the public to forgive her. The prosecution played his 911 call. Jurors watched Lindsay Clancy sob while the man she sent out for takeout screamed that she killed his children. Both sides agree on what she did. The only question left is the one that has divided every single person following this case. Did she know what she was doing? That's a big question. You guys have a lot of questions. Today on the program, it's a listener question and answer. We're going to do this case. We're going to talk about Nolan Wells. We're going to talk about David, but we will be starting here with the Lindsay Clancy case, and I'm going to put up a graphic right there like that, because I'm sure Todd's in the background going, you got to change your graphic.
I was.
There we go. And to help us go through it today, Robin is off at a speaking engagement. Coffin Daffer is at a speaking engagement. So you got us. You got Lisa and Todd and myself. Bob may come on at some point. Bob's flying back. So it's a free-for-all today as we discuss this. We welcome your thoughts, your questions, whatever you want us to discuss on these cases in the comments section over here on YouTube, and we will try to answer whatever we can about this case. One of the big questions, this is just taken directly from our social media. I'm just going to throw it out there. This is a listener. I got a new prop here in the studio, the phone. Should I ask it like a caller?
Sure, go ahead. Sure.
I keep going back and forth on this.
This sounds kind of weird and creepy.
just a little bit.
I'm just gonna read it. I keep going back and forth on this. Patrick says she heard a voice telling her to kill the kids, but she didn't mention that voice until a week after. If you're truly psychotic, wouldn't that be the first thing you say, or does the delay make it sound like she's building a defense? Danielle asked that on Instagram. I got my thoughts on it. Todd, let's start with you. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think my first thoughts are a couple of things. I can see where people might lean into that a little bit and think, you know, that's exactly what she's doing. Why didn't she mention something prior to her killing her kids? No. But I also have to say this, if you're going through mental anguish, whether it's depression, whether it's psychosis, what, sometimes you don't want to talk about it. Like sometimes you're so embarrassed by the situation that the last thing you want to do is admit, hey, you know what, Patrick, you know, I'm speaking for Lindsay, you know, Patrick, I'm hearing voices. Like I don't know in my life, and I've never heard voices, let me just say that up front, but I'm not sure that I've ever really shared truly everything about my own mental health my entire life. So I think that'd be it's a big stretch to think somebody's just going to stand up and go, you know, I've been feeling this postpartum stuff. Now I'm hearing voices. It might be a big leap to expect her to just turn to Patrick and tell him that.
Yeah. I mean, in a perfect world, of course, I'm hearing voices. I need help. People are afraid to say that sort of shit out loud. And you can say it's right or wrong. You know, I mean, obviously, if she had said it earlier, would there have been more help? I don't know. I don't know that it would have made a damn bit of difference, because she was pretty clear on like her feeling like shit, and saying that she's thinking about harming the children. I mean, she put the warning signs out there. I don't know that hearing the voices would have changed a whole lot in terms of how the medical community would have responded to her, quite honestly, because they didn't respond correctly to the information they already had. But I think that is the reality. I mean, people, the person who knows about our mental health the closest is us, our own individual selves, about our own selves. Now, even if I think you try to share it with others necessarily, you're not always going to get it all out there. It's hard to verbalize. It's hard to fully express and have someone else fully understand what it's like to be you or me or any individual person. But even in a case like this, where it does seem that it was put out there pretty extensively, there is going to be a fear factor. People are going to have motivating reasons not to share that sort of information. They don't want to be looked at like they're crazy, even if she's suspecting she might be. And by her Google searches, she was seemingly wondering if she was a sociopath, the way she was looking things up. So I can understand it. Lisa, what are your thoughts on that one?
Well, this is very interesting to me on so many different levels, but in the United States, we have such a stigma against any sort of mental health problems.
Yeah.
We're stigmatized. People with schizophrenia are stigmatized. People who have bipolar disorder are always held up as, oh, they have bipolar disorder, which I believe she was later diagnosed with.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what is so hard for people to believe is just how much these medications do mess with your brain. If you have bipolar disorder, you should not take an SSRI, which is a serotonin reuptake inhibitor. You should take those because they affect bipolar differently and cause psychosis. And a couple of the medications that have been mentioned that she's been on are SSRIs and SSNIs. And I know this is all technical stuff, but as a person who has dealt with somebody who has mental health issues her entire life, I can tell you all those medications will do something different to the brain chemistry. And these voices could have come on that day.
It's
and
it's
she
not like
never
they're
had the
there.
Chance to mention it.
Good point.
It's not, it's not like you're kind of like, hey, I want you to do something for me. I need you to go get an Arch Deluxe from McDonald's. I know they don't have them anymore, but go ask for the Arch Deluxe. You're going to have a lot of fun with that phone.
Yes, you're going to have too much
fun. But that's the thing. I mean, they can come on. They can go. What's baffling to me about this case is it's almost like we're playing with a deck of cards where we're just pretending that certain ones don't exist. It's like, no, like the medical community is pretty grounded on this, that if you take this and your brain is this way, these could be the negative side effects. It's well documented. There's literature about it. So here's a prime example of it happening. And we're like, nah, it can't be that. Wait, what? Like, why would it not be that? Clearly, it's that. Like, here's what happened. Like, why are we pretending that that's suddenly not a thing? Because it makes us feel better that we're going to lock away the evil woman who killed her children? It's horrible. She knows it's horrible. But it's I don't know. It's kind of clear as day. Like, this could be the horrific side effects. This is why we have the warning labels. This is why 85% of the prescription drug medication commercials are filled with disclaimers because of shit exactly like this.
And that's exactly what I was going to mention. I mean, how many of those mental health prescriptions that are advertised quite regularly on television and whatnot have these huge lists of side effects that are mental and that might affect their mental health? And I don't want to put too fine a point on it, but as I said, as somebody who has dealt with trying to find the actual medications that will work in this instance, it is trial and error. You're going to put on a medication and hope against all hope that this one works. And then 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 days down the line, you're realizing this is not working. And in that time, you're still dealing with all the mental health issues that you have. It does, these medications don't work immediately. It's not like taking a Vicodin and in 30 minutes, you're not going to have pain in your knee. This is something that takes a long time.
And it goes layer upon layer because you got your mental health problems. Okay, you're going to take this medication to help it. Okay, so there's that. Well, this one's not working. We're going to try you on this one. Okay, well, you want to do this one. Then we're going to have to do this. We're going to have to lower this one while you're taking this one. So it's going to be kind of a cross effect here while you're adding this one in. And this may not work. We're not quite sure because it's going to take a little bit of time to determine if that one works. And that one doesn't work. So we're going to add this one on and you're on top of that. Meanwhile, you still got this whole river of shit flowing down here. But this is all wick wavy and inconsistent. Yes, it's going to cause people to do crazy things. That's what happens. I'm just really baffled why it is, you know, up for debate so much on this, other than people who've never faced dealing with any of it. And that might just be it. And that's why I've been saying bless your heart so much.
You know, true Southern way. But yes, they just don't know. They have healthy brains. So they can't fathom that there is something back there that is talking to you that is not you. Or they can't fathom that there are actual problems that you can't think straight. You can think straight. You can go to school or work every day and seem completely and totally normal, if you use that term. But still, you're suffering and dealing with all this stuff in the brain. So this is one of those things. People don't talk about it. People don't know. But I think everybody is so emotionally invested in the fact that these were three babies, three children, three innocents that were killed. So that's where all this emotion comes in. You got to take all that emotion out and just look at three deaths, yes, but don't sit there and go, oh, they were babies, so she must burn in hell.
I think she's in her own hell right now.
She's
never getting out of. I mean, we've seen so many cases where you have a defiant, you know, screw the world defendant who's done horrible things to their family, their children, whatever. This isn't one of them. It just isn't. I don't know. Watch the case. It's not. It is just not that. Here's another one on this. So the prosecution made a big deal about showing 9 prescription bottles that were still mostly full. If the whole defense is that she was over-medicated, how does it help them that she apparently wasn't even taking all of it? Again, this is like one. This is such an easy to explain thing, but it seems so baffling for so many. And again, bless your heart. I'm glad you've never been in this situation with any of this shit. How does it work like that? It's kind of what we just talked about. Oh, you need this? We're going to try you on this. We misdiagnosed you. We're going to put you on this. And we're still currently misdiagnosing you. And that doesn't work. Okay, well, let's switch over to this one. It's what I was just saying. We're going to take you off this one. We're going to put you on that one. That's not working either. She gets frustrated. She's already not in a good mental state. She's not making good decisions. She decides herself, I'm not going to take this one. This isn't working for me. I got to talk to somebody else that maybe will get a better grip on what's going on, because these people have now have a track record of not helping me. She goes to another provider. That provider doesn't talk to the other provider. Take some of this. Okay, I'll take some of that. That's how you end up with 13 different prescription bottles and only a little bit taken out of each one, because you keep trying a different one that the next provider is telling you to take. There you go.
Exactly.
One of the things that I noticed too is I watched the chat very closely on our lives, and there's a segment of people who say, well, she didn't follow her doctor's instructions. Okay. She should have taken the pills the entire length of time, blah, blah, blah. So there's that mindset. And then there's a group of people who say, well, it's up to her to read all the side effects from all the prescriptions and understand all that. So part of them are putting it, But in both cases, they're putting it on her. Like, it was her responsibility to understand the reactions that it would have on her body in conjunction with the meds that she was already taking. But if that's the case, if she was supposed to know that, shouldn't she also be in charge of deciding which ones were right and not right for her? Like, I can't see both sides.
She's
can't
already
be the same thing.
She's already operating with the broken brain.
Right.
So you got that going on. Like, if anything, it's funny to me to a certain extent, because I feel like the prosecution doesn't realize they're digging a hole for themselves. They're just not quite seeing this. Where, like, by arguing this point, you are arguing, well, why didn't she do this? Because she wasn't operating with a full deck of cards. That's why, from the beginning. So you're expecting that she's mentally capable of handling all these decisions and making making these choices about her brain's mental health that's already not functioning well. And then we're going to medicate it up and medicate it down on this one and that one and go, well, we hope you're still making the best choices for yourself with your broken brain. And now that we fucked with the 30 ways to Tuesday with these meds, well, why would you not be thinking clearly? Gee, I wonder why she wasn't operating clearly. And it's the burden of the state to prove that she was operating clearly. Well, they just keep doling out evidence of why she wasn't. It's like, what are you arguing here? Like, clearly, take postpartum out of it. I mean, if you do this to anybody, I wouldn't be trusting that person to sign a contract.
Here's my point. And High Plains Hounds just said it. Every month, I get new medications.
Yeah.
Have you ever read that book that comes with your medications?
It's the cover our ass book. Yeah.
They look at it and they go, in the garbage, you know, unless you're being put on a new medication or you're somebody that's really, really, really trying to get into this. The thing is, those of us who are prescribed aren't the doctors. We're not the pharmacies. We don't have the knowledge of what it's going to do to our brain. The only thing we have is how we feel.
Yeah. I see somebody, also testing positive for weed is not helping her mental issues. Did she test positive? I don't know that she did. I haven't heard that yet.
I saw something that she did test positive for THC.
Guess THC, what? That ain't going to do shit. That's not going to do anything.
The THC, it's reported that she took it as a gummy a couple a day or two earlier to relax and to sleep.
Clearly, it's just someone who doesn't understand what these things are and how they work and how they work together. Taking weed is not, again, it's just, I'm sorry.
And
your argument is falling on deaf ears because it doesn't make any sense.
And anytime you take a THC gummy, by the way, if you're doing it that way, it will stay in your body much longer.
I fucking live on them. So, you know.
I'm not saying I do. I'm just saying that it will stay in your body longer.
It's just this. If that was the only thing she was taking, none of this would have happened, probably. Right. You know, that's the thing. It's, I don't know. I am baffled by it. I hope. I'm just getting so frustrated with this case because it's just, I don't know. This seems pretty black and white to me. This cause and effect happened. It's horrible. It's sad. God, I mean, but this isn't Lori Daybell by any stretch of the imagination. One more on this. This is what I can't get past. She says she ordered the takeout. She texted him to stop at CVS for kids' medicine. She timed when he'd be gone. This is their take. How does the defense explain all of that planning and still say she was in psychosis? Because from where I'm sitting, a psychotic person doesn't set a 25-minute timer on her husband. Yeah, they actually do. Psychotic people in psychosis, they're not sitting in the corner shaking all the time. They're driving the cars next to you. They're at the grocery store. They're calling in. Nope.
They're calling into the radio show. I can hear you in my feelings.
They're everywhere you want to be. And I think that's a very uncomfortable thing for a lot of people to wrap their mind around, that there could be people in active psychosis every day all around you. They are. So even though it's an icky thought, it is what it is. People under active psychosis they're not vegetables, I guess. I mean, again, it's kind of a black and white answer, but it is what it is. And I'm surprised.
It's not like the old days of insanity and insane asylums where you see somebody sitting there doing this.
Yeah.
Because psychosis is what's going on in your brain, not what's outside. And you can plan stuff very well.
Yes.
Thoroughly when you're in psychosis, but you don't realize that it is your brain telling you to do these things, not your not your soul.
It's not based in reality. Yeah, I mean, it's cognitive distortions that you're basing your decision making on. So, and it can be anything. It can be something as horrible as you're going to kill your children. It could be there's a secret message for me in this book from Robin, and he wrote it to me just specifically, and it's on this certain page, but I have to find it, and I don't know what it is because my brain is telling me that it's there. That's a cognitive distortion. I'm believing that it's there. I can sit down and plan all afternoon. I'm going to read every page of this book to find the secret message that Robin wrote to me in it. He didn't write a secret message to me in it. But if I have a cognitive distortion that tells me that that's there and my mind is not in the right place, it's going to go down that road. I can sit and plan all sorts of shit. I can plan to call him. I can plan to go outside his house and then call him in the middle of,
I know you wrote something for me in that book. What did you write?
You know, and then you're really fucking creepy and weird really quick. I love this phone. But that's what that is. That's a cognitive distortion that then takes on a life of its own. You can plan shit out in psychosis. That you can.
Very much so.
You can. And I'm sorry the education system has failed everyone so much that no one has any fucking clue on how any of these things work. Or maybe they're blessed enough that they've never had been that fucking close to it. I don't know.
Because it's mental health.
Yeah.
Because it leads into mental health. And I don't think any of the quote unquote normal people of the world really understand the problems with mental health and broken brains.
Yeah. What's your take on it? I'm going to throw this one out there. This is one I've seen in our comments and other places as well. Are we looking at this case in a fair light? Because I've seen some people argue if this were a man that had done this to his family and the tables had been turned, we'll be looking at it the same sort of way. I don't think you can make that comparison. Because men don't go through postpartum depression or postpartum psychosis or have the chemical change that goes on in your body with your hormones and shit after giving birth to a child. And we don't experience that sort of hell that some women have to go through. So I think it can be made in some ways of, I mean, yes, if there's a guy that was going through something, whatever it may be, and they were medicated this irresponsibly and this horribly and they did it, I think I'd be having the same conversation. If we were to look at it that way, we just haven't had a case like that, quite honestly. But again, it's not apples to apples here because the underlying condition we're talking about is something that was brought on because of the fact that she's a female who just had a child.
That's what I was going to mention because this is something that we did talk briefly after the show about yesterday. Because there's not that motherly connection with fathers and their kids. Yeah. Fathers who kill their kids, they're nasty. They're evil. They're monsters. We get all that. But for some reason, she's being held to a higher standard, I think, because she is a woman and because she's the mother who gave birth to these children. Mm-hmm. And I think if it was a man, we'd still call him a monster and all that. But if there was history and evidence showing that there was something going on with the medication, that there was mental health illness, I think a lot of people would be more open to accepting that and looking for a different outcome with the trial.
Because I'm seeing a lot of comparisons to who's the guy who burned the house down with his family and Chris Watts.
Yeah.
I'm seeing comparisons to that. I'm seeing it's like he also didn't go to 30, all these different, you know, doctors and have 13 medications and was failed 500 ways to Tuesday. He just decided to go do that shit one day. You know, was there mental health problems beforehand that he should have been helped with? Yes, but he also didn't raise his hand and try to get help. She did. That's the huge difference here. She did.
I saw somebody compare it, and this was just popped up a second ago, mentioning Nick Reiner.
Yeah.
So, here's the difference there. You've got somebody who is diagnosed with schizophrenia and other mental health problems who decides they are going off their meds. Mm-hmm. That is a different situation than somebody who has no idea why all of a sudden they are hearing these voices.
Yeah.
And are feeling these feelings of wanting to harm or not knowing or crying all the time. If they don't know and they're trying to get the help, that's one thing. Mm-hmm. But if they are already diagnosed on a plan that's supposedly working,
yeah,
and then they stop, that is their fault.
I think, I mean, Nick Reiner is another one that was filled by the system too, but there was there was more, you know, selective choosing of what he wanted to participate in his own recovery and not. So there's a difference there, definitely. But it's also an indictment on the system for his parents, because the options are, well, he can go be homeless under a bridge, or you can take him in, or he can go die. And that's kind of it. Like, he wasn't going to be in a state mental hospital, didn't qualify for that. There's not really, that doesn't exist very well.
No, they don't.
So, I mean, the options are homeless and die on the streets, or the parents who have money put him in their guest house. I think most parents are going to put the kid in the guest house if they have a guest house. You know, most of them it's in the basement. So it's an unfair comparison, but at the end of the day, it's still an indictment on our society in our country of how up we think we are with people, and how great we think our medical system is, and how much it has to grow and learn from its mistakes, especially in the area of mental health, and how behind we actually are to what we already do understand about it. But what we choose to accept about it is a very different thing than what we understand about it. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in as we continue to follow that case. Let's go over to another big one this week that continues. An 18-year-old football player gets on a boat with his friends on the 4th of July. They go to an island 10 miles off the Mississippi coast. No cell service, no facilities, no way off unless someone takes you. His friends come back. Nolan Wells does not. 2 days later, a park ranger finds his body face down in the water. The friends say he chose to stay behind to talk to a girl. The girl's own sister says Nolan told Katie that he was going back on the boat with the boys. The state did an autopsy and is not releasing it yet until it gets in front of a grand jury. The person who did the autopsy already has a string of questions behind her, which we're learning about. The family flew his body to Washington for a second autopsy, and the pathologist couldn't determine how he died, partly because the state had already removed his throat, which is part of the process in a lot of autopsies. Not saying that's abnormal, but the absence of information is there, and then we get the absence of answers, and the state's not giving them to us. The DA says a grand jury will review it. The sheriff says no foul play before the autopsy was even finished. It's a shit show. And the only question anyone in this country can stop asking is the one that still has to be answered. What happened to Nolan Wells on that island? Your thoughts are welcomed in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue to dig into this case. The girl on the island, her sister says Nolan told her that he was getting back on the boat with the boys. This is one of the questions from you guys. The boys say Nolan told him he was staying with the girl. Crump, the attorney for the family, has said himself, somebody's not telling the truth, so which is it? Because one of those stories is a lie, and the lie tells you everything about what actually happened on the island. I think that's the problem with the question is a problem to begin with, because everybody's looking at it as this or it's that.
Right.
It's black or it's white. And it's not. It's
what
not.
If it's both?
What it
two
can
things
easily
can
be, both.
Be right at the same time.
Todd, how many times have you been at a gathering where you've told somebody, yeah, we'll talk in a little bit, and then you tell, I'll see you later, to somebody else, and then you disappear?
Todd, I mean, all the time.
This is Todd's going to a get-together. And that, where's Todd? Oh, I think he already left. What? Yeah. But people do that. People do that. And it may be because, you know, you just want to get the hell out of there. And it can also be because he's mixed on what he wants to do. I'm going to go talk to the girl. Okay, you go do that. There's other boats here. There's other friends, other rides. You can get it. Okay. As your friends, you're thinking, okay, he's going to go do whatever it's going to do. That's not what our son would do. Well, your son's 18 and drinking on an island. Would your son, I mean, there's things people do, teenagers do, that parents also think, my son would never do that. Well, surprise. You know, or he told the girl, I'm taking the ride back with my friends. Gets there, the boat's gone. Can't find her. There's a lot of plausible possibilities here. And I think that is the biggest problem going into this case is thinking that you have to go down this road or that road based on somebody not telling the truth. I think both of them could very easily be telling the truth. And that's what makes it all the more curious is, well, what did actually happen? What do you guys think?
I don't know that we'll ever actually know what happened because we don't have the ability to talk to Nolan at this point.
Yeah.
You made a very good note, Tony. I mean, yeah, you could say, hey, I'm going to go do this with this group of friends. I'm going to go do that with that group of friends. Different stories so that you can go off and do whatever the hell you want. Maybe he wanted to spend some time alone. I don't know. You know, he was getting ready to go off to school or live his life after graduation last year and all this stuff. We just don't know. So we don't know that. We also don't know if there's another story out there to be told. Was there somebody else that he met on the island? Was there another group of people that he knew and was going to go hang out with? We just don't know enough at this point to say that she's lying or the friends are lying. We're not there yet.
Yeah. We're not. And the thing is until we get all the information back, everything we're doing is just speculating and putting our learned experiences behind us and seeing, okay, this is one guy amongst a group of friends. They are all different. Did something happen there? Mm-hmm. And it could be as simple as Todd will tell you, I've done this myself. Like you said, telling one group, hey, I'm going to go with this group, telling that group, I'm going to go with that group. And then you absconding with somebody else completely different or by yourself.
Yeah. It
happens all the time. Also, he's a very athletic young man. So he probably thought, I'm not going to say probably because again, we don't know, but he could have thought, I'm just going to take a swim and got caught. There are so many things got caught in a riptide or whatever.
Yeah.
There are so many things that could have happened.
Yeah.
We just don't.
And we're all running everything through our own prisms of what have I done? Well, it doesn't really matter at all what you would have done, you know, because I run it through my head. I would have probably done pretty close to what I've theorized a little bit here. And again, I have nothing to base this on other than here's what I would have done, which is not worth anything. If I wanted to stay on the island, beautiful place, wonderful summer day. I like being by myself. I would have probably said, I might get a ride over here. If I was talking to the girl, maybe I'll see her later. I'm going to tell her this. I'm going to go off to a part of the island where there aren't boats, where there aren't people, and I'm just going to enjoy the peace for a little bit. And you can get out there and a riptide can take you and that can be the end. And it would be stupid, but I could see myself doing that at like 17 or 18 or 19 and not thinking very much about it, because you think you're invincible, you can fight anything. Hell, people still try to argue that Nolan versus the riptide, like, well, he's a strong athlete. Yeah, doesn't fucking matter if it's a riptide. I don't care if you're Superman. The riptide will win. But again, we don't know. We don't know if a riptide was even involved. But let's not argue about shit that's just like, you know, man versus anvil falling on his head. He's really strong, so when the anvil falls, he'll catch it. It's not how that works. There's so much lunacy in some of the arguments here. It doesn't make any sense. And at the end of the day, the answer is we don't know. We do not know. Another question, the state autopsy removed Nolan's throat. They say it's routine, but when the family's own pathologist got the body, he literally could not examine the neck. Well, of course not. That's because the throat has been removed, which means he can't rule out whether Nolan was strangled or choked or had any neck injuries at all. How is the family supposed to trust an investigation where the one piece of evidence that could answer one of the biggest questions is sitting in a state lab in Mississippi? No, you can't. And they have plenty of reason to ask questions, especially about the medical examiner and her track record, which we're going to be doing a story on next week. There's plenty of reason to ask questions. What is not up for necessarily a big debate is whether that's fairly routine. It is. It is fairly routine. And the people who have access to that piece of material, it is what it is. It's part of Nolan, or that piece of evidence. Does have a serious track record of not telling the truth or fucking with the truth or not examining things thoroughly enough. Mississippi sucks. okay, in every sense of the word.
In a word.
It I mean, I could say far worse things, but it's fucking horrible. So yes, the not having faith in the medical examiner and the track records in Mississippi up to this fucking day are horrific. You know, everybody's like, well, there's Emmett Till, and like, yeah, there's that, but there's like cases that are like just a couple years ago too. Like, those are the real historic ones. Shit hasn't changed all that much in a lot of Mississippi. In some places it has, in some places it hasn't. What we're seeing as reflections out of this friend group seems to be a group of young people who maybe have broken the mold, who aren't living in the shadow of the bullshit of the state and the racism that has manifested itself decade and generation after generation. Many of the friends said, we don't, you know, not that they didn't say we don't see color, but we're a very diverse group. It's not a thing with us. And a lot of young people, it isn't. It just isn't.
a thing with a lot of young people.
And that's a wonderful, wonderful thing. So to have it constantly interjected here to these kids that, well, you killed him because he was black. It's like, what? I mean, okay, that's insane. But the place that we're going to get the evidence from that's going to prove this way or that way doesn't have a great track record, and they're the ones in control of the information, which I get why there's the questioning, why there's a lot of people wanting to make sure that the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted, and that's great. But let's not add other letters into this that need crossing and dotting if they're not part of the equation to begin with.
Lisa and I have both lived in Mississippi. When this story came out, the first thing on my mind is this is not going to end well.
No.
And the reason why I said that is many, many different reasons. The first reason is because, of course, the race issue is going to come up in the discussion. It just is. That's the day and age that we live in. And I can understand that to a certain extent.
Sure.
The other piece is that history of law enforcement, medical investigations that don't quite do their job. And we've seen some things already in this that are questionable. And so that's where my red flag is kind of at this time. And the other piece of it is that no matter how this turns out, a young man is gone. We may never truly know what happened to him. And the sad thing is that, and as Tony, you said, these kids seem like they've broken that mold a little bit. It's the people above them that I'm most worried about. I'm worried about the parents. I'm worried about the investigators. I'm worried about that medical examiner. I'm worried about the judge when that comes down. I'm worried about the guy who said there's no foul play. That's the area I'm most worried about, because truly maybe nothing happened here that was nefarious. My question is, are we going to get the details if it was nefarious? That's the only question that I have in this case.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where it needs to be looked at closely. It just in inciting and people to believe something that we don't have the evidence to even go down some of those roads yet, I think is grossly irresponsible, especially for some of these friends who, you know, let's assume that they had nothing to do with this for a moment, for the sake of the argument, and they were all good friends and they grew up together and they didn't, race wasn't an issue for them and it never had been for them. Then to suddenly be accused of murdering one of your good friends, I mean, that's insane. I mean, that's really fucking evil to start accusing people of something like that if you don't have any evidence that points there. There's plenty of evidence of improper investigations in the past on other cases. Those kids have nothing to fucking do with that.
Right.
Those kids have nothing to do with that past. These kids are living a new life, and they're trying to start a new history and a new generation that's not going to fucking live that. So don't fucking go after them when they have nothing to do with it. Unless you actually have evidence that points to it, and we don't
have that at this time. But what we do have is Gen Z and Gen Alpha are... they are probably the least racist or
prejudice.
What's the word? Prejudice. Sure. Thank you. Yep. Or prejudiced generations ever. And I am so thrilled to see that, because these young people are the future of our world. But, and I say that, Gen X, boomers and millennials. We are the ones that are running the world right now.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, I'm an elder Gen X, so I'm right on that edge of being a boomer. And I can tell you that that generation, they will hide things. So I'm just saying that in Mississippi, it's even worse.
Yeah.
I mean, everything has to be prim, proper, and exactly the way it's supposed to be.
Asking questions, there's nothing wrong. Making accusations against, if you're going to make accusations, and once you have evidence, I have no problem making accusations.
Right, right.
But have the evidence first before you make the accusation and make it against the right people.
They're doing
right now. It's just like, it's like, I get like everybody's, everybody's angry. Everybody wants answers. A kid is dead. So I get the outrage, but just, it's like being near an angry dog that's been attacked or something. It's going to start biting anybody around it, even its most people that it cares about and loves the most, because you're in a fit of rage and you're just lashing out at shit. That doesn't help anything either.
And the fact that they're doing blanket accusations against his entire friend group and then trying to narrow it down to one person. The thing is we have no information. We can't say that John Smith A actually strangled him or that John Smith B hit him on the head.
Well,
we don't have any of that.
And the autopsy that has come back thus far that we have seen does not show there to be, you know, stabbing or anything of that sort. Now, I mean, strangling, that would be the thing that's been, and why do people go, well, maybe it was that, because that's the only place that we don't have an answer to yet, because the information isn't there. So it's very easy to quickly want to fill in the blank based on the history, the well-documented shit history of Mississippi. I get that. But again, there are, not every person in Mississippi is hanging people in trees or having a Klan meeting on a boat.
But that, depending upon where you are in Mississippi, that is considered just something that happened.
It is. And that's sick and disturbing. And I think that's a very important thing, too, because I don't think a lot of the country has any fucking clue.
No.
I mean, I remember the first time I drove through Mississippi, I'm like, what the fuck happened here? I lived in
Yazoo City, which is an extremely poor town in Mississippi.
I know you guys live there, and I've driven through it several times. We went down to, we're driving down to Florida. We stayed in Jackson. Downtown, there's a hotel. I forget the name of it, but it was like redone. It was like abandoned forever. And of course, I said, I got to stay there. And it looked beautiful. I mean, they did beautifully redo it. But I'm guessing this is probably what it would be like to stay in, you know, the Hilton in Baghdad during the war or something.
Ooh.
Because it, I'm like, they valeted the car. I don't know where they took it. Somewhere secure. But there, you got in front of the building, there's security, walk in the building, don't talk to anyone. There was people right there trying to pull me away from that already. I need to talk to you over here in the alley, just some random guy. Go in the building, don't leave the building. Okay. And the whole night, it's just sirens and cop cars, and they went into the bar and it's bulletproof glass. And it's just, it looks like a third world. And it's like, holy shit. And then driving through some of the city, just, it looks like the houses are burned out and bombed out. Like, what the fuck happened here? And this is a big city. And it's like, holy shit. And then drive through some of the smaller towns and drive through the sticks of Mississippi. You're going to find a different planet. You're going to find a part of the United States that you didn't think you know existed unless you've actually seen it. And so there are horrible things that go on unsaid out there in the sticks of Mississippi and in large areas as well. So I get it exists. But again, not everybody is that. And that's important. And from the evidence that we've seen of these friends thus far, I'm not seeing that. And a month into this case, if there was, these kids document everything. If there was horrible things in the track record of them being horrible to him in the past, or there's racist shit out there, trust me, that would have leaked out by now, I think, from that friend circle. Some, they're not all like, oh, we're never, people don't conspire that way. People can't hold secrets. And somebody could become a millionaire pretty quick if there was some sort of horrendous video of their friends doing or saying horrible things about Nolan. TMZ would pay big fucking money for that, by the way, that exists. So if somebody has that, bring it out. Sell it to TMZ, make a mint, pay for college and your first five homes. Like, you could do it right now if that exists. The fact that we haven't seen that yet tells me a lot.
And here's another thing. Everybody is focusing on his friend group. There were, 300, 400 more kids and people on that island at that time. It could have been nothing to do with his friend group. We don't know.
Yeah.
We just don't know. And that's the thing. If it goes somewhere criminal, we will follow it. Right now, we don't know. And the evidence that we have seen where people are pointing at the friends doesn't seem to be going that direction. Mm-mm. Could it be somewhere else, though? 1,000%. But mm-hmm. we don't know the answer to it. I'm sorry some people in the comment section are mad we're not going down this route or that route. But we're in the middle. And we don't know. We don't know. And that's where this sits right now. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue to discuss and follow wherever this case may go. Let's go over to one more case that's had some interesting developments this week. 5 days into testimony, 12 witnesses and a judge who looked at what prosecutors laid on the table and said the people met their burden on all counts. What came out of that Los Angeles courtroom in the David case was worse than anything the public had pieced together from filings and leaks. A timeline that allegedly starts when Celeste Rivas Hernandez was 11 years old and ends with her remains in the trunk of a Tesla that sat in an impound lot while David played shows on a world tour. The question going into that hearing was whether there was enough evidence for a trial. The judge has said yes. The question is answered. The ones that aren't are the ones you guys have been asking a lot. We're going to start with one of these. In February of 24, a cop stood in front of David and told him Celeste was 13 years old. He said she told him she was 18. And then everybody left. That was 14 months before prosecutors say he killed her. She was alive. If there had been a follow-up, any sort of looking at texts, any sort of, oh, by the way, you know, she's not 18, right? And then walk away. Maybe this wouldn't have happened. I don't know. We don't really have a system in place that does that. Is there a world that exists in which he truly didn't know how old she was, Todd?
I don't think so. We've got some very smart people who watch this podcast with us. And somebody made a very good point yesterday. If she was of age, she could have traveled with him. There would have been no need for an affidavit or some sort of paperwork for her parents to write and sign that she could travel with him wherever he went, right? So that should have been a red flag to him in the first place. Now, there are pictures of her where she looks like a young woman. I'm not going to deny that.
Sure.
But there's certainly plenty of pictures where she does not look like a young woman. And I think in this day and age, we are in a situation where people look older than they are, guys and gals, period. That's the way it is. There's no doubt in my mind he was underage when they met, right? Mm-hmm. And at that point, there were several years between them. He was, you know, I think he was close to what, 17?
It's like a 5-6 year gap here.
Yeah. That's a big gap when you're younger. It's different when you're in your 30s, somebody's 30 and 35. But when you're 17 and somebody else is 13 or 14, it's a big gap. And it's hard for me to believe that he did not have some inkling that this girl was underage.
Yeah. Lisa, do you think there's any world where he didn't know that she was a child?
No. And I say this because I was one of those precocious, matured early girls. Mm-hmm. And I dated above my age range. Mm-hmm. And every one of them knew. I'm sorry, they did. And I'm looking back now going, you know what? He was just dang creepy.
And at that age, you're not thinking that.
No, you're not.
You're not. I mean,
another good point from one of our viewers. He sent a phone to her middle school.
Exactly. Yeah. So obviously he knew what grade she was in.
Hey, there's the answer. Flat
Thank
out,
you.
We know the answer. Yep, there we
Thank
go.
Thank you.
Well, and I was surprised this week to learn how much the family of Celeste seemed to have knowledge of this. I mean, according to some of the stuff that's come out, they allegedly signed and had notarized the consent form for him to take her overseas. That was a big question. How is she getting on a plane going overseas without a passport? I thought, well, maybe she has her passport on her and she's missing. Maybe that explains it. No, there was like actually a notarized form that the parents signed allegedly for her to go. So the parents are saying, oh, this must be a great idea. And I don't know what the hell's going through their mind. Maybe the same sort of shit that went through people's minds. We talked about this a little bit yesterday with Eric Faddis. The Michael Jackson shit, where this is such a great opportunity. Oh my gosh, there's a famous person that's, and if you're speaking to a fairly disenfranchised group of people, people who don't have a lot of money, people who are in tough situations, from what I understand, that's from what this family might have been, people don't see reality on reality's terms sometimes. And I don't know if it's thinking, this is such a wonderful, lovely thing. Yes, he's a few years older, but they're going to tell themselves that there's nothing weird going on here about this. Or maybe it's okay, because in a few years, it won't be a big deal once they're all adults. They're not yet. And he's got a lot of money, and we don't. And this could be a ticket to a life that is going to be helpful. I mean, there's all sorts of shit people will tell themselves to justify bad behavior or bad decisions. I'm going to guess there was a lot of that going on, and it really fucking irks me, because I get, to an extent, these people are victims. Their daughter is dead. But I feel like there's a level of, we don't want to take responsibility for the stage we set for this to be, it have been able to happen. And in my opinion, I think the parents should be looked at criminally. I don't know that any sort of charge is going to be much of anything other than a slap on the wrist or some probation or a fine or whatever the fuck it may be. It doesn't really make a difference at the end of the day. But those parents failed that girl without a fucking doubt, for whatever their motivation or reasoning or their thought process was at the time. Fail. And I think there should be repercussions. I don't know that there will be, though.
There probably won't be, because they lost their daughter, and they're going to go easier on them because of that. Yeah. That's just my opinion and how I've seen things happen in the world. Yeah. But I think you're right, because looking back, I know this is all anecdotal, and so therefore doesn't apply. But looking back, when I was 15, dating a 21-year-old, my mother was like, oh, hell no. When I was 17, dating a 28-year-old, she was like, oh, hell no. So, I mean, those parents were just not paying attention if they didn't know. But in this case, I think they did know.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. There may have been some money given, you know, there's been some speculation that he was helping them with money and all that kind of stuff too. So who knows where this is all going to go.
And it might not have been so much of a, hey, let me, you know, like in a, some sort of, you know, conniving nefarious,
right.
Let me, if I can sleep with your child, I will write you a check. It's more like, oh, your parents need some help with the mortgage this month. I got that. Because that's typically how that sort of shit works. I mean, unless you're Diddy and you're writing, you know, non-disclosure forms before the baby oil parties, you know, or whatever, you know. People get very formal with their agreements, and some people are just, it's passive-aggressive bullshit. Whatever it was, there's responsibility there, and that's concerning. Two chainsaws bought on Amazon under a fake name. Here's another question. A third from the Home Depot. Delivered through Uber Postmates. I say Depot, like Target.
Oh, okay.
I like to make it a little more sophisticated here. and that one was never recovered. A body bag, an inflatable pool, a shovel, a burn cage, a fireproof mat. It says that's not a crime of passion. That's a shopping list. How does anyone argue this wasn't planned when the receipts are dated? I don't think anyone's arguing that it wasn't planned. Other than David, But they're arguing that he was not the cause of her death. They've been very specific on the verbiage in all of that. I'm going to guess they're going to end up going down a road of, yes, he did these things to the body, but he didn't kill her. So it's like the lesser of the evils. He's going away no matter what, whether it be for the child charges or the disposing of the body stuff. But they're going to try and argue that this wasn't something that was essentially planned, if you will. I guess the dates of when he bought those items are going to be key from what I think we understand. They happened after the death.
Right.
If they happened prior, that wouldn't look very good. But I guess my question to you guys is, how stupid do you think he is? I mean, this is really fucking idiotic. It's beyond, like, if you just watched a television show where a murder occurred in it, you'd have a better, like, grasp on how to handle this sort of situation. His immediate reaction is, like, literally product fulfillment. Like, oh, well, this happened. I got to get these things to get rid of this body. Granted, he changed his name on the Amazon order, but it still went to his house under his credit card. Young and dumb? I mean, this is really young and dumb. This is dumb.
You know, Robin, when he's on the show, talks about loving critics and guardrails in life. Mm-hmm. And we know that he was, you know, he was raised in a home, homeschooling, very religious, all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
We see a lot nowadays, and I'm not trying to generalize, but children nowadays are kind of wrapped in bubble wrap, and they're not allowed to make mistakes in life, and they're not guided away from those mistakes once they've touched the stove and burned their hand. They don't have a chance to actually learn by it. And I wonder if the homeschooling and the high religious beliefs in the family had something to do with that. But young and dumb is exactly what's going on here. I also want to throw this in because we've talked about it a little bit. But he's young. He's had no guardrails in life. He is now, you know, possibly getting a music contract. He's going to go out touring, all this stuff. The kid's going to start making some money. Mm-hmm. The industry, how much responsibility, you know, he's had a manager and we know that the manager said, listen, I don't, you know, get involved with everything he's got going on. I don't know what's going on in his house and all that kind of stuff. And I generalize some of the statements he made early in this case, but I wonder about the industry and their responsibility as well. If all three of us worked in radio, these record companies knew what their artists were up to. They knew and they covered for it. And they, you know, they got them the drugs they needed. They did. They got the hookers and blows, we used to say in radio, all the stuff that they need. It was provided. It's hard for me to believe that some part of the record industry, or at least his label, at that point where he was going to get a contract, his manager, but they were not aware of some of this going on, especially of underage Celeste.
Todd, this is Janet Robertson. I have a question. My little boy, I like to think I'm not bubble wrapping him too much, but he is, he's wanting to have his 13th birthday party. And I really wanted to have a special experience, with him for his 13th birthday. He's still on the nipple. is that too much? Do you think I'm bubble wrapping him? Is it fact that he's still breastfeeding? Is that, because I don't see anything wrong with it. Sometimes I get chocolate milk and I pour it on there and we have chocolate milk Fridays and it's, but he says, Mom, this is too much. This is not what the other kids are doing. I'm not quite sure. I don't want to set him up to be a loser in life, but I also want to be prepared if he murders his girlfriend at some point to know how to cover up a body.
Okay, I have to say, when you told me you were getting the phone, I thought, oh, this is so great, great. And I'm like, maybe that was a bad idea.
Bad idea.
Hey, I love this. This is great.
I know,
this
it is wonderful. Great.
The boy's got to have his toys. That's all I'm saying.
Chocolate milk Fridays. You know? Never going to think of that differently. Another fine point that we learned this week in the David case, 11 air fresheners.
Jeez.
Oh, my God.
Some of them said love is in the air. L-U-V.
That's ironic.
Love is in the air inside a car with a decomposing 14-year-old. He thought 13 air fresheners are going to cover up a decomposing. But I don't know what else he would have been thinking. I mean, is there any other thought process here other than, if I stop over at the Quick Trip and pick up 13 air fresheners, that'll cover me.
Young and dumb. Young and dumb.
Young and dumb and trying to CYA. I really think that's what's going on. Whether he was the one responsible for her death or someone else was or she was. The CYA is all over this. That's why the burn cage, the chainsaws, the pool, all that. It's cover your bottom.
Yeah. I mean, incredibly resourceful on ordering things and trying to cover his tracks, but incredibly obvious as well.
It's like sort of smart, really dumb, you know, kind of a combination.
Yeah, it's I don't know what to make of it other than it's shockingly stupid and not stupid enough to be like by reason of insanity, just stupid, just like Chad Daybell type stupid too. Like those two probably could have, you know, it would be like how Chad Daybell and David, how many of them to switch a light bulb out? I think you would have been, you know, having a dark room. I don't think any bulbs would be changed.
They would buy a new lamp every time a light burned out. That's what they would do.
Yeah.
Redo it's the like, kitchen every time new lights needed to be put up or something.
It's like you got through this far. You know how to get out of the bed in the morning, but you couldn't figure that like this seemed like the best approach. Really? Really? Okay. All right. I feel like we should do a show like How to Be a Murderer or something where this kind of Dateline, really.
Well, they did that. There was a show called How to Get Away with Murder.
Oh, there was.
It was a legal. It was a legal show. Had a female lead. She was black. I wish I could remember the actress's name right off, but I can't. But anyway, she was a lawyer, and part of the law school curriculum was how to get away with murder. 3 seasons, I believe it had.
Wow. Well, there you go. So it already exists.
It does. Yeah.
I just want to say everybody's invited for Chocolate Milk Fridays after the show. Okay. First time caller, long time listener. I'm going to hang up and listen to the answer. Okay. Bye.
Toledo, go ahead. Okay.
Toledo, you're on the line. All right. That's going to wrap up this episode of the program. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Enjoy your Chocolate Milk Friday. We will continue our conversations in the comment section. Until next time, for Todd and Lisa, I'm Tony. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.